Good afternoon. You're listening to Valley Public Radio, and we're joined today by a special guest in studio, violinist Elena Uriosti, who will be performing tomorrow and Sunday in concert with the Fresno Philharmonic in a concert titled Beloved Beethoven. Elena is a two-time winner of the prestigious Sphinx competition and was recently selected as a BBC New Generation Artist and has been featured on the cover of Symphony Magazine. Elena, welcome to FM 89.
Thank you.
It's so exciting to have you here and in Central California for this concert coming up this weekend. Tell us about how you got into the world of classical music. This is something that is always exciting and interesting to learn about, how the different artists that come to visit and perform with the orchestra took different paths to stardom and success in such a wonderful, wonderful field. How did you first come to the violin?
It was actually something that I came to via television. I watched a lot of Sesame Street as a little kid, and I saw one particular episode where Itzhak Perlman, the famous violinist, was featured on the show playing his violin, and I saw it and said, I want to do that. And that was when I was two, so then I bugged my parents relentlessly, and finally when I was five, they allowed me to start taking lessons, so I began in my public school.
Now, I don't want to back up a little bit. When you were two, you knew that's what you wanted to do.
Apparently.
I know people who are in their 30s who don't know what they want to do with their life. That is amazing. Was it something that you always, well, not so much before you were two, but have you always had a great love for music?
Yes, definitely. And my parents are not musical, but my mom always had music playing in the house, so I think I was sort of steeped in it from a very early age.
What do you think it was about hearing Itzhak Perlman on television that day that captured your interest as such a young child?
Oh gosh, I have no idea. I'm sure, you know, he was carrying this pretty shiny looking thing and it made sounds, and I can only guess that I thought that was pretty cool. I still think it's pretty cool.
Indeed it is. And from when you were five, starting out again at a relatively young age, learning the violin, did you ever have moments where it was, it's easy to see now that you're a big star, but were there ever times when it was a challenge for you? I think a lot of young musicians, when they're taking lessons when they're a young child, sometimes get frustrated with the instrument or frustrated with things. They love the music, perhaps, but were there ups and downs in that process?
Oh, of course. I mean, I think if you don't have doubt somewhere along the way, then you're not really human. And of course, every child loves to play, but they don't necessarily love to practice, and I was no exception. But I think my parents were not stage parents by any stretch, but they were both – they always held me to a high standard of quality in whatever I was doing, you know, whether it was schoolwork or the violin. So I think they figured, you know, if you want to do this, then do it well. We'll, of course, pay for your lessons, but you have to work in between. So, and I think anyone who loves music inherently has sort of a natural, or the hope is that they have a natural sense of discipline about them. So I think the more I worked and the more it bore results, the more I wanted to keep working.
It's one thing to be a young musician studying the violin. It's another to be on stage with the Philadelphia Orchestra at age 13. How did you get to that point? What was your break? Maybe that was your big break. But how did you develop as a young artist and really decide this is my life?
I don't really think there was any one thing that sort of propelled me in one direction or another. I just loved music so much that eventually that sort of eclipsed my love for academics. And of course, I had the pipe dream when I was 6 years old. Oh, I want to be a concert violinist, because, you know, to a six-year-old, that just means fancy dresses and pretty concert halls and, you know, prancing across stages. That's a very glamorous life to imagine. And I don't know. I think just little by little, I moved in that direction. As for a big break, I don't know. I don't really consider that as something, you know, I played with the Philadelphia Orchestra because I won their student concerto competition when I was 12 or 13. And that just sort of fed my desire to be a concert violinist.
If you just joined us on Valley Public Radio today, we're talking with guest violinist Elena Uriosti. She is performing with the Fresno Philharmonic this weekend in their concert titled Beloved Beethoven and performing the Beethoven Violin Concerto. We'll talk about that in a moment. But in looking at your resume, the biggest orchestras in the world, certainly in the U.S. and beyond, the Cleveland Orchestra, New York Phil, Boston Pops, the London Philharmonic and beyond, with all of those wonderful orchestras and some of the most famous concert halls in the world, were there any that particularly stood out or still stand out to you that were especially memorable? It seems easy for us who are not on those stages to think they're all so memorable, but were there any that particularly you're proud of or memorable in your account?
Well, performing at Carnegie Hall is always, it's a total rush. And when you think about all of the people who have stood right where your feet are at that very moment, it's so awe-inspiring and nerve-wracking. And so Carnegie Hall is definitely, it's right at the top. When I played with the Cleveland Orchestra, actually, that was particularly meaningful. That hall is so beautiful as well. It's like a wedding cake inside. It's so elegant and beautiful with the intricate woodworking. And my teacher for many summers, David Cerrone, was at the time still living in Cleveland, so he was there, and that made that very, very special. And actually, just on Monday, I played with the Philadelphia Orchestra, not in their usual hall in Philadelphia at the Kimmel Center, but as for their Martin Luther King Day concert. So I played at the Martin Luther King High School in outside Philadelphia, and, you know, it wasn't necessarily a gorgeous concert hall, but the opportunity to play with the Philadelphia Orchestra again was really, really, I'll never forget that. I mean, they're my hometown band, and I grew up idolizing so many of them, so to be standing there in front of them was really, I'm still kind of reeling from it.
A great honor indeed. I mentioned earlier the two-time Sphinx Competition Award winner. Tell us about that. What does that mean, and how did you get involved in that, and what is the significance of that award?
Well, the Sphinx organization is it's Detroit-based. It is an organization devoted to the diversification of classical music, so particularly in the Latino and African-American communities. So there's many components to the organization. There's a lot of outreach. People go into schools and introduce kids to classical music. There's a lot of after-school programs designed to, you know, keep kids off the streets and further their musical education. They have a summer program for Black and Latino string players who are teenagers who are working towards improving their crafts as instrumentalists. And then they have a big competition every year in Ann Arbor and Detroit where Black and Latino string players from around the country can compete. And I won that when I was 16 and then 20 in the junior and senior divisions. And as a winner, as a laureate, you play with all of these amazing orchestras around the country and do a lot of outreach yourself. And it's an amazing and very noble organization to be a part of, to sort of be an ambassador for classical music in these communities that might not otherwise be exposed to it.
I know you do a lot of work visiting schools and things. I believe you have some of that on your itinerary here in Central California. What's it like to go into the schools and inspire young musicians to perhaps consider something that they hadn't thought of in the past, a career in music, and to see someone that maybe looks like them on the stage in a prestigious concert hall or something like that?
It's definitely one of the most gratifying things about the profession to sort of ignite a spark in a little kid. If they have heard classical music or if they have seen a violin before, then it's sort of confirmation to them that, you know, this is a cool thing to do. This is exciting. And if they haven't, it's especially fun to see a child react to classical music for the first time. You know, there's this misconception that classical music is boring or that kids won't like it, but all you have to do is just expose them to it, and chances are they're going to have some sort of pronounced reaction.
It's said that music is a global language. Classical music is certainly beloved around the world. Do you believe in the power, or how do you see the power of classical music to bridge cultures and continents in that way, as an artist that travels around the world and is able to speak to so many different groups, and both verbally and also through your instrument? How do you see the role of classical music in uniting cultures and peoples?
I think classical music is just like any other type of music. It's just music. You know, the fact that we don't use amps and pickups and all these things to produce it, you know, it's another way of doing things. And I think that if you just present it to people as you would rap or country or mariachi or, you know, anything, and let them decide for themselves, I think that it would garner similar results. So to be able to do that, I think I feel very lucky that I have this tool at my disposal. And I think it's another language within the larger language of music.
Elena Uriosti is our guest today on Valley Public Radio. She's performing with the Fresno Philharmonic this weekend in an all Beethoven concert, and you're performing. Well, tell us about the piece you're performing, the Violin Concerto.
The Beethoven Violin Concerto is definitely one of the staples of the violin repertoire. Some would even consider it sort of the top of the mountain. It's a very difficult concerto. Some of its most pronounced characteristics, I would say, are its purity. It's a very exposed work, but you know, some would consider it the most beautiful. It's a very silvery work. Not a lot of frills, ruffles. It's pure and sublime even. And some of the challenges are, like I said, it's extremely exposed. So intonation is always something that's fiendishly difficult about it. But it's a really, really incredible feeling to be in front of an orchestra playing this, you know, crown jewel of the violin repertoire. And I look forward to it every time. And yeah, it's a big honor.
With a piece like that that's so familiar and such a part of the standard performance repertoire for a top-flight violinist, and I imagine this is one that you've performed many times over many years,
yes.
Do you look back and think about how you have changed as a artist over the years in a piece that has been familiar for so long and has changed in your performance?
Definitely. I think that's actually a fun thing to think about. We learn a lot of these repertoire staples when we're first perhaps not ready for them. You know, you have to learn them sometime. So I think about my first performance of this and what I was worried about then as opposed to what I'm worried about now. And on one hand, it's sort of, I can breathe a sigh of relief because some things aren't as hard. And on the other hand, I'm like, oh, well, why isn't that easier yet? But the Beethoven, paradoxically, has always been something that I feel remarkably comfortable playing. I can't explain it. But to me, I don't know whether it just fits well in my hand or I have somehow come to terms with how difficult it is. I don't know. Maybe it's just that I recognize that I will never, ever be able to do it justice. And from there, I just have decided to enjoy myself or something.
Well, isn't there something also about a piece that as you mature as an artist over your career, classical musicians have careers that are rather longer than pop stars, I think we could all say.
Hopefully.
That there's always something new and something that where you can see yourself progressing as an artist in a piece like this over
definitely.
The years?
Oh, definitely. A piece like this, you can never tire of discovering new things in it, and your work with it is certainly never done. So it's comforting in a way.
Very exciting indeed. You mentioned you just performed on Monday with the Philadelphia Orchestra. What is it like being an international touring artist and always being with a different orchestra or the different locale, talking to a different group of people? What is that side of the music world like in your eyes?
It can be anything ranging from very cool to very exhausting. I think I'm probably kind of nomadic at heart, so I don't mind moving around, although I am kind of sick, so I guess sometimes it takes its toll, certainly. But I think it's very rewarding to be able to access new people on a weekly basis and sort of deliver what you have to say to them and you know, hopefully someone will like it. And as you sort of build up your career, you get to know more and more people in every place that you go play. So when you go back, you get to see old friends, and it's nice. It's a slow process, but I find it to be very gratifying.
Well, we're definitely looking forward to it this weekend with the Fresno Philharmonic and a concert titled Beloved Beethoven. Guest violinist Elena Uriosti joins the orchestra to perform Beethoven's Violin Concerto, and she joined us today in our studio in Fresno. Elena, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for
our pleasure.
Having me.
Thanks a lot. This is Valley Public Radio.